Blog Talk Radio.
The call to post means it's time for Off to the Races on the Racing Biz Radio Network. We're talking thoroughbred racing and breeding from Virginia, around the Mid-Atlantic, and across the country. Off to the Races is powered by the Racing Biz, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. Find them at www.theracingbiz.com. Now here's your host with Off to the Races on the Racing Biz Radio Network. Hello, everybody, and happy Thursday to you, or happy Breeders' Cup Eve, for that matter. It is Thursday, the 4th of November, and we are just hours before the kickoff of the Breeders' Cup, Breeders' Cup 2021, starting Friday and Saturday at Old Del Mar. So a lot of things to talk about. Going to be digging into Breeders' Cup Friday a little bit later on the program. My name is Frank Vespi, and for the next hour or so, we're going to be talking about thoroughbred racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic and around the country, including Breeders' Cup stuff. So a lot of things to do, a couple of guests. We got Chuck Simon coming on a little bit later. Derby Bill's going to be here, Nick Hahn. So lots of things going on here on Off to the Races. As always, our show powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. You can find them on theracingbiz.com. Hey, I just said that. Also, social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that jazz. Also, a free mobile app. Get the free mobile app. Keep up to date with Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding all the time, in your pocket, on your Apple or Android device. Can't beat that. Free stuff is always good, and always good to stay up to speed with the latest in Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. Now, let's do just a couple quick news items before we start getting into the serious stuff. Last week marked the closing weekend of live racing this year for our friends at Delaware Park. Congrats to leading rider Jamie Rodriguez up there, who absolutely ran away with the riding title, winning 114 races. That was 47 more than runner-up Carol Cedeno, which is to say that's a lot. Rodriguez won twice on opening day, five times on the second day of the meet, and he just kept right on going for good measure. He finished up with a three-win day, including taking the meet finale aboard Mutaka Mills. So Jamie Rodriguez, a huge, huge kind of breakthrough season at Delaware Park. Also, congratulations to leading trainer Jamie Ness. He ran away from the competition with 55 wins, which was, I think, the runner-up had 22. And the leading owners, Bell Gable Stable, trainer Gary Contessa came out of retirement, or training retirement, not retirement retirement, but training retirement to be their private trainer. And that worked out pretty productively this year at Delaware Park. So good stuff. Delaware Park reaches the end of the 2021 season. And speaking of people who have earned congratulations, give this one a listen.
Bull leader on the outside and Mr. Jefferson and the Mendocino on the far outside into the stretch. About a furlong left to go. Bull leader on the outside resting a narrow lead. Mr. Jefferson punching through out of the inside. Michael Trombetta looking for win number 2,000. No matter which way, he's got it here. Mr. Jefferson trainer Michael Trombetta, win number 2,000. Mr. Jefferson, bull leader.
Maryland native and Maryland-based trainer Mike Trombetta gets his 2,000th win. That happened a little bit earlier today, Thursday the 4th, at Laurel Park. His horses ran 1-2 in the allowance test for two-year-olds. Mr. Jefferson, owned by Larry Johnson and ridden by Michael Sanchez, getting the money over Bold Leader. Pretty nice when your horses get to the 16th and you know you're going to be one and you're going to be two and you're just trying to figure out the order. So that works out pretty well. Trombetta's 2,000 wins have helped him generate more than $68 million in purse earnings. Top trainees include 2006 Preakness runner-up Sweet Northern Saint, as well as Grade 1 winners Wet Your Whistle, Win, 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 and Next Question. Trombetta's also third on the Maryland Million leaderboard. He's got nine career Maryland Million wins, so sniffing around the leaders, although Del Capuano has established a sizable advantage in that regard. So anyway, congratulations to Mike Trombetta for hitting 2,000 wins in his training career. Turning to tonight's show, as I said, Breeders' Cup upon us, taking place Friday and Saturday at Old Del Mar. A Maryland bred, Nick's Go is the morning line favorite in the Classic. He's bidding to join the Great Cigar as Maryland bred Classic winners. Kind of a interesting horse here. He won the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile last year pretty impressively. A couple of tries at a mile and a quarter this year didn't go too well, but then he bounced back and concluded his preparations by winning a mile and an eighth grade one at Saratoga, winning the Whitney. So he's certainly up to a mile and an eighth. He's good to go. Whether we're going to have to see about the mile and a quarter, but Nick's Go has been really a fun story. Maryland bred by Angie and Sabrina Moore at Greenmount Farm, a son of Painter out of Cosmo's Buddy. Cosmo's Buddy was a turf sprinter, in fact. So that's an interesting horse. So should be a lot of fun seeing how this shakes out. Breeders' Cup Classic taking place on Saturday. Nick's Go, the 5-2 morning line favorite. A little bit later, Derby Bill Watson going to be here. Nick Hahn going to be here. They're going to help handicap Friday's big races. Friday is the juvenile day. It's Future Stars Friday, I think they call it, but it's all the juvenile races. So you got the juvenile fillies, the juvenile turf, the juvenile fillies turf, and the juvenile turf sprint. Pretty big fields in most of these, other than the juvenile fillies has just 6, and maybe we'll chat about that a little bit in a few minutes. But our first guest, before we get to Nick and before we get to Derby Bill, is going to be Chuck Simon. Chuck is a podcaster, host of the Going in Circles podcast. He's a former trainer. He started Battle One in the 2005 Breeders' Cup Sprint, and it just so happens we have that clip here somewhere. Here we go.
Breeders' Cup 2005, ready for the start, and they're off. And it is Attila Storm who breaks quickly. Attila Storm in Battle One, lost in the fog. Wildcat Air right there in the mix of it in the early.
That was kind of most of Battle One's race. He was engaged early. He was involved with the early pace. Ended up he didn't win the race for sure, but he did manage to help duel Lost in the Fog, the big favorite, into defeat. Lost in the Fog fading to fourth while Battle One was farther up the track, but it's still a pretty good accomplishment. A lot of really good trainers have never run in the Breeders' Cup, and Chuck Simon going to join us right now. Chuck, welcome to the program. Happy Breeders' Cup.
Hey, thanks, Frank. Appreciate it.
I bet you didn't expect a Battle One clip for your entry here.
Not that one. I think we only got one call in that race, that one.
I got to ask you, so you, as a trainer, you had a good run. You won a lot of races. You had some pretty good horses. But you were certainly not, you know, Todd Pletcher, Bill Mott, bringing out, you know, dozens of super well-bred yearlings every year and whatnot. So what is the experience like when you get a horse to the Breeders' Cup? I mean, what is that whole thing like for a trainer who's maybe a little more in the kind of blue-collar end of things?
Well, honestly, back then I had a lot of good horses, and we ran in a lot of the bigger races. And, I mean, I had worked for Alan Jerkins for a while. I had worked for Nick Zito when he was, you know, had good horses. I worked for Wayne Lucas for a little while. So, you know, I've been around the big race. It's not like – and honestly, training horses the same. I mean, it really is. You're just training better horses. But it's always great to be in a race like the Breeders' Cup because it's the end of the year race that's circled in red ink on the calendar, and you know, you're one of the best of the best. Even if you're a long shot, you're still one of the 10, 12, 15 best horses in your division, and anything can happen, as you've seen in, you know, numerous times. I mean, we're going to have, what, 14 races, the Breeders' Cup races this weekend, and we're not going to have 14 favorites win. We might not have seven favorites win. We might have four favorites win. So, you know, it's just a great atmosphere, and, you know, the big event days are really something that's taken away from a lot of the other schedules outside of the big event days, but the days themselves are great. I mean, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of, you know, you're seeing really good horses race after race after race. And, you know, the owners love it. And I mean, as a bettor, it's offering you something that we lack a lot of the rest of the year, which is full field of extremely competitive races. We're not getting, well, I mean, this year we got a couple short ones, but 12 out of 14 aren't short. So, you know, you got to look at it that way. But, you know, the Breeders' Cup they've done well. They've capitalized on what their, you know, their weekend. I mean, they changed the focus, what, about 15 years ago, where, you know, they used to just put a lot of money into races all over the country all throughout the year. But they refocused on just this weekend, and it's hard to argue with their success.
Yeah, that's certainly true. So when you, I mean, so your horse, you know, was involved early and then kind of backed out. I mean, do you experience that as a disappointment, or do you experience it as, well, you know, he was sort of a long shot and we got here and that's pretty cool?
You know, it was a disappointment. And the fact of the matter is that he wasn't as good at that time of the year as he had been the previous year and earlier in the spring. I mean, he danced a lot of dances. We went to Hong Kong with him. We came back. He ran all over the place. He won on Derby Day on the undercard, which was probably his best race. He just dominated the Churchill Downs handicap, and he won by five or six. But we ran in two races. We finished second twice in a row after that at Churchill. Both times the race went 107 and change. Then we went to California and we ran out at Del Mar and we finished second. A horse named Greg's Gold came up the rail and beat us. And I rode Pat Valenzuela, who's never left the rail in his entire career. And that race, he left the rail open and we got beat. And then we flew back to Saratoga for the four-go, which we were the favorite. And the whole summer and most of a lot of the spring, the DRF used to have divisional rankings. And we were the top-ranked sprinter of the year for most of that year, because even though he was running second a lot of his races, he was first, second all of his races. And then in the fall, he started to tail off a little bit. He finished second in the race at Saratoga. Bobby Frankel beat us. Of course, no shame in losing to Bobby Frankel, but still, it got a little bit frustrating. And he really kind of tailed off a little bit in the fall. We ran him at Keeneland in a turf sprint because we had done that successfully. Sprinted him on the turf and then moved him back to the dirt, and he really didn't fire in that race. And I tried to make excuses because that's what you do as trainer. You know, you try to find a reason, you know, why you should run in the Breeders' Cup, not why you shouldn't. And as it turns out, he just was a little over the top, and he really never was quite as good as he was that spring. I gave him some time off, brought him back the next spring. He didn't run good at all in a couple of races. The owner sent him out to California thinking maybe he could get him going out there. He ran a couple decent races out there, but he's you know, his reign at the top of the division was over by then. To answer your question, I was a little disappointed, but I was worried that he wasn't really 100%. It wasn't anything physical. I mean, he just didn't seem like he was on top of his game. And that happens, and there's horses here. I'll be honest, Latrushka is a horse who I think might be in that category. I was very much against Swiss Skydiver last year. I made a lot of money betting against her in the distaff because I thought that, you know, she had run huge all year, but she had danced every dance. And the race in the Preakness where she won, which was obviously something that'll be, you know, they'll have that trophy on their mantle forever. But that was an extremely tough race. And modern-day horses tail off. They just do. you know, the old days, it's funny because in social media, Ed DeRosa had said something about Latruska shouldn't be horse of the year no matter what happens. And there was a lot of, you know, people, of course, wringing their hands over that. And Lady Secret's name was brought up. And it's funny because I said, you know, if you look back at Lady Secret's year in 1986 when she was horse of the year, she ran 15 times that year.
Yeah.
And she won. She won 10. She won 10 graded stakes in 1 year. So, I mean, she ran against the boys three times. She beat him in the Whitney. And it's like, man, I know racing is never going back to that, but it's like, wow, you know, like you just, I mean, that's unimaginable. But these days, horses that are campaigned hard, at some point they will generally tail off. And that's, you know, we'll see what happens. Obviously, it's a game of opinions, and there's no better place to have a good opinion than on Breeders' Cup Day.
you generally do get rewarded for your good opinions on Breeders' Cup Day. And you mentioning Swiss Skydiver, I mean, she's another one. She had really danced every dance. And as you said, that race in the Preakness, I mean, she and the Derby winner, whose name completely is gone.
Authentic.
I mean, they hooked up like 3/8 from home, and then they were never more than a nostril apart. So
yeah, that was a very taxing race, and the speed figure was enormous. And he was able to overcome it and wind up, you know, winning the Classic. But then he never ran again. So we don't know how he would have come back this year. And obviously she came back and just, you know, this year she just wasn't as good as she had been the year before. She just wasn't. And,
yeah,
you know, so it happens. It happens to the best of them. You go back and look at great horses. Like, if anybody out there can ever get the hands on that book, Champions, the DRF Press printed it about 15-18 years ago, and it's got the PPs of every horse who was declared a division champion horse of the year, going back to like as early as they had, you know, past performances, so like the 1910. But even horses like Citation, at the end of his career, his last few races, he had really tailed off, and he just wasn't, you know, he wasn't the famous Citation. And I remember Lady Secret herself, her last few starts, winning colors, bolted at Saratoga in an allowance race.
Is that right?
Her last start. Yeah. I was standing right there, and, you know, people were kind of, I mean, we didn't have social media, we didn't have computers, we didn't have cell phones, but winning colors, showing up in an allowance race was like on like a Thursday at Saratoga was like, you know, what is she doing here? And she did not complete the race. She bolted. She had enough.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that. You mentioned full fields pretty much everywhere. One of the two races that is short, interestingly enough, is the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Only six in that one. I'm curious what you make of that. Is it Echo Zulu, or is there some other factor here?
I think it's Echo Zulu in part. I think part of it is shipping to California. I think that there's only, what, one California filly in the race. So generally, you're going to get a lot more participation from the home team. And it, you know, Baffert had that once, Grace Alder, who had been really good. And then her last race, she ran really bad. So she had run really well at Del Mar, and I think in a Del Mar debutante. And then she came back at Santa Anita and ran terrible. So mm-hmm. I think the first three horses from the Del Mar debutante, the horse ran 1, 2, 3, came back at Santa Anita and ran like 5th, 6th, 7th. So, so like that race, nobody wound up in this race, and I think that's part of it too. And generally, you would usually see three or four California fillies in this race, regardless of where it's held, especially at home.
Yeah.
You know, there's, I mean, Echo Zulu is really a New York horse. There's really no other New York horses, and she's dominated the you know, the New York races she's running. The only Cherie DeVos and her filly to take a shot, more or less because it's a smaller field. And she's shown that she's got a, you know, she can be on the board, and it's a $2 million race. So, I mean, Dallas Stewart's filly is just a dead one-run closer. So, you know, she's going to hope to clunk up and get a piece. And
You know,
Brett Calhoun's horse is a really nice filly, and she just crushed at Churchill. It's pretty hard to tell what she really faced in that race. And you know, Brad Cox's horse, of course, said, you know, ran really well in Alcibiades. But I think that's more, you know, it's more of a just a this year, and the Echo Zulu has just kind of discouraged everyone from New York. California just doesn't have that many viable candidates. And, I mean, it's mostly, you know, horses that are based in Kentucky that are going out there.
Yeah, it's interesting because you kind of look at it and say, gee, it's a $2 million race. It's a grade one. It's a lot of money. It would be grade one black type in the Breeders' Cup for broodmare, you know, purposes. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to show up in the race. So it's interesting that so few have chosen to.
Well, don't forget, you know, it's expensive to ship out there and to enter. And Echo Zulu won all the – she won all the winning you're in. So, you know, I can't remember the horse. It's my Brad Cox's filly, the five horse. I think is a winner. And, yeah, Juju's not, but I think the other ones are all paying to be there. So, and it's, you know, like you kind of can poo-poo it because you say, well, these owners are really wealthy. But when you talk about the expense of shipping out there, of shipping the horse, of paying the entry fees, and then, you know, the Breeders' Cup doesn't give you a discount because you got a horse in the race. It's expensive to run a horse in these races. You bring friends, you bring family, or you got a bunch of owners, and it might cost you $50,000, $60,000, you know, depending on the race, you know, $50,000 or $60,000 just in expenses, not counting the horse, the entry fee. So, I mean, unless you think you can hit the board, it becomes an economical thing too.
Yeah, no, it's, I remember, a few years ago when King Leatherberry had Ben's Cat and he had won the quote unquote win in your end, but it wasn't really win in your end because Ben's Cat was not Breeders' Cup nominated, and the expense of the late nom and then all the other stuff was for a race that was $1 million race. And, you know, in these races, and particularly in a turf sprint, you know, you can run great and, you know, be beaten two noses and be fourth.
Holy Bull didn't run in the Breeders' Cup because he wasn't a Breeders' Cup nominated, and Jimmy Kroll, the trainer, he wound up owning the horse because the owner died after the horse's first start, and she left him in the will. And you're talking a significant amount of money. Back then it was like $400,000. I mean, you know, your horse goes out there and throws in a clunker, and, you know, with all the other expenses on top of the supplement, it's crazy. And, you know, you go back to the first Breeders' Cup, 1984, the winner of the Classic was a horse named Wild Again, who not only was kind of unheralded going into that Classic, with Sewell Gold was the, you know, the big name horse, but he was supplemented into that race for $360,000. That's $360,000 And not only
that's
did
a big
win,
roll of the dice, yeah.
The owner bet like you couldn't believe. And they said he walked out of Hollywood Park. He had to hire a security guard, and that they had so much cash that he had a paper bag full of money. That they not only, you know, tried to win the race, that was the bet, because I think it was like 12% or 15% of the purse. The supplement at that time, or maybe it's 20%, but you don't see that many horses not nominated these days, but it still does happen once in a while.
Yeah, well, it's cheap to nominate now. I mean, it's cheap to nominate, you know, at the proper time. It gets real expensive later. But
I got to admit, though, I mean, I've probably bred 10, 12, 15 horses over the years. I don't think we nominated a single one that a Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
I think it was like $500. And it was like, you know, we're paying $2,500 for stud fees. We're really, you know, we're worried about the Breeders' Cup when we get there, you know. Breeders' Cup, right? We'll have won a whole lot. And we'll probably have sold the horse anyway. So, but it is, you know, it is expensive to run in these races. It's not cheap. And the Breeders' Cup, I think, only pays I think they only pay 50 or 55% to the winner. Most places, most racetracks, you get 60%. But they, I think they pay down further. You know,
yeah, it's 52% to the owner, to the winner, right?
Yeah,
52,
yeah.
17 the second, yeah.
Which is less than you normally run for. It's usually 60-20.
Right.
60-20,
right.
10-5, and then the other percentage gets split up among all the, you know, the bottom horses.
Right, right.
But
right.
It is, you know, it's not cheap. And if you're Godolphin or somebody, then it's not a problem. But if you're, you know, just a regular guy that owns a restaurant, putting up $125,000 is a lot. So
yeah, it's a little challenging. So Chuck, talking with Chuck Simon here, Going in Circles podcast. Chuck, from your perspective, what's the biggest Breeders' Cup story as we head into the weekend?
I hate to say this, but it's probably Babbert. You know, because he's a player in some of these bigger races, and you know, with Brad Cox having probably the favorite and second favorite for Horse of the Year now, and also having probably the favorite and second favorite in the Classic, that kind of that story is kind of tempered a little bit. I mean, certainly Latruska is one of the big stories. It's amazing, like, Jackie's Warrior, as great as he's been this year, there hasn't been much talk about that race, but it might be a product of, like, okay, Jackie's Warrior, you like him in this race. Well, who do you like behind him? You know, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of talk about that race. Dirt Mile is another race that you know, you're going to have a 4-5 favorite with Life Is Good. Though, interestingly enough, there are two Japanese horses in there, and one of them led in the turf in the sprint last year. So I'm not sure what their plans are, but that horse won 21.44 to the half, so he has a lot of speed.
Right.
And I'm not exactly – I was talking about this on our show last night with Barry, and, you know, saying, hey, if that horse does the same tactics, like maybe to try to set it up for his entry mate, because we don't know anything about these Japanese horses, really. So,
yeah,
you know, could you see Life Is Good getting in a wicked speed duel with, you know, the Japanese horse and like blowing up the tote board? I don't know. It just seems that it could be crazy, but you know, there's no big stars really in the turf races. I mean, they're great fields, but there's no, like, household kind of names, and, you know, Tarwana's back, but, you know, she spent most of the year running second over in Europe. The domestic spending's out now. I mean, he's
right.
Been the American's top turf horse. So I don't think the real storyline is Baffert, and people are going to be really watching and seeing how his horses perform. And, you know, it's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if the horses run bad, everybody's like, oh, you know, the security.
Right.
You know, they got the security,
right,
they're watching,
right,
them. And if the horses run good, some people are going to say, oh, you know, he must have did something.
Cheating again.
Yeah, you know, he must have got away with it, or he did it before, or blah, 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 blah. He paid somebody off. And so I think that's going to be the interesting thing, because you look at his horses in the race, and a lot of them are good horses. The filly in the distaff that has the rail, she looks a little inexperienced versus that field, but she's a good horse, and she's progressing, and she's getting better. Medina Spirit, I mean, he has a fighting chance in the Classic, certainly. He's a tough horse. He's a gritty horse. I don't know what kind of trip he's going to get. I mean, to me, it looks like Nick's Go is going to open up two on the field. And I've said this for about 2 months now. I said, listen, if Nick's Go was the only horse Brad Cox had in the race, he would definitely be on the lead. But the fact that Nick's Go has got a horse that could use a little bit of pace as well as Nick's Go, there's no possible way that anybody's getting in front of Nick's Go, right? So I'm not sure what Medina Spirit's going to do, because he's kind of made a living most of the year going to the lead.
Front.
And he's drawn outside, and Hot Rod Charlie's going to want to get tax position, and Essential Quality's going to want to get tactical position. So, you know, you got that factor. And then, you know, the horses the day before in the juvenile, he's got three in the juvenile with the 12-horse Corniche. Yeah, he's, you know, going to be probably second choice to Jack Christopher. You know, people are going to really be focusing on his horses, not just because of the potential, not just because they're betting on him, but because of all the controversy that was kind of created. I'll be honest, I was surprised that the Breeders' Cup took the tack that they did. I would have thought they would have kept everything internal and then at some point said, hey, listen, we want to, you know, there's been some smoke here. We're just going to put some extra security measures in. But they didn't. They actually came out and said, hey, this is what we're doing. We're thinking about this. We're going to let him come and talk to us. And I saw that Joe Drake today put out a piece that criticized the Breeders' Cup's decision. And it wouldn't be like a big classic racing day if we didn't have a Joe Drake article that's racing in some way, shape, or form. But there are a lot of people that have that same opinion. I think if it was held in Kentucky this year, if it was held in New York this year, it would be – you would have a much, much stronger case of excluding Mr. Baffert. But I think in California where he's based, where he's – you know, they have – he's racing there. I just think it would be at the date that they did it at. I mean, if they had made this decision in July and said, hey – we want to just let people prepare and give the owners, because it's really not fair to the people that own the horses. And I know people are going to say, well, that's too bad. You got horse with Baffert, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the Breeders' Cup Championships, we shouldn't be putting people in a position where they're
going to have to. Where they may be screwed.
Well, and it's not great for the horses to move the horses either. I mean, you know, you don't want to be moving a bunch of horses 2 or 3 weeks before the big races, because people are betting, they're going to bet $150 million on this, you know, and the betting public should be considered as well. I mean, it's in my opinion.
I'm laughing.
And I know it's kind of, but,
it's
you know,
like
people are betting on these races. A lot. They're betting a lot on these races. I mean, it's
like you've beamed in from another planet, though. I mean, you know, here's the thing you never hear anyone in power and racing say. We've got to think about the betting public, you know?
I know.
I mean,
it's great.
You just never hear it. And this Baffert thing, this is a little hobby horse of mine, and then we're going to bring in Nick and Bill in a minute. But, you know, racing has handled the Baffert thing wrong at every step in every possible way, it seems to me. You know, the obvious thing to do after Medina Spirit got the positive in the Kentucky Derby, and if you can hear the noise in the background, sorry, it does not mean my house is falling down, although sometimes it feels like it. We're having some plumbing work done. But, you know, the right thing would have been for the Maryland Jockey Club and Churchill Downs and NYRA and the Breeders' Cup to all put their heads together and say, and come up with a joint position. This is how we're handling Baffert now. And instead, everybody goes their own way, as they always do, and you end up with this ridiculous, you know, scenario where Churchill says, well, we're not going to let him run. You know, of course you're not, because he doesn't run there. He's already run the races he cares about in Kentucky. Maryland says, well, we're going to let him run. Then he loses. So then New York jumps in and says, oh, well, you lost, so we're not going to let him run. Then the Breeders' Cup's holding the bag at the end of the year. The whole thing is insane. It's so horse racing, but it's nuts. Are you with me on this, Chuck?
I am totally with you. And I was talking to a friend of mine today via text, because that's literally how we talk now. And he is very much, you know, I guess we had this debate about, he was talking about the whip rule in California. And I'm like, listen, man, I don't care if they follow the rule or not. You know what? Try to win the damn races and let the stewards sort out the thing afterwards, because it's a terrible rule. It doesn't make sense. If you have to go back 10 times and video the race, replay it in slow motion 10 times to determine if something was wrong or not, you know. But I guess the point I was making to him was that it's so difficult in racing to get things done, and it drives me crazy when people say, well, look, the NFL does this. Yes, the NFL does this. But remember one thing about the NFL. Every single person is an employee. The only people that aren't employees are the owners. Everybody else works for the owners. The commissioner works for the owners. The referees work for the owners. The team officials work for the owners. The players work for the owners. The people that work in the selling hot dogs, they all work for the owners. Racing is not like that. Racing is a series of independent contractors, including the tracks, including all the trainers. And it's so difficult to get everybody on board, except if it's like, you know, George Navarro. And remember, George Navarro was the operator at every track in America. I think Indiana wouldn't like one race after that tape came out with the, you know, we juice everybody.
The juice man, yeah. Yeah.
Right. They there was like one state for like 3 months, and then they wound up giving them a license. And you got to understand that sometimes the commissions, their hands are tied. Like, we'll see a penalty that's handed down that's really ineffective, and it's like, you know, like, oh, yeah, 1,000 miles flying. But a lot of times they're bound by the state, you know, law that says the maximum penalty for this kind of violation is $1,000 or $2,000. And that's all they can do, you know, because they can't just say, right, well, it'll be $20,000. And, you know, we get a lawyer. And that's part of the problem. And that's – I wrote a piece 6 months ago about the Spafford situation. And I said, you know what, one of the things that a lot of people in racing have little sympathy for Baffert, that he uses lawyers as battering rams, and he just pounds on the commission's door with the lawyers until they give up. And look at the situation in Kentucky. We don't even know that the Kentucky Racing Commission hasn't said anything. They haven't said anything about anything.
There's still not a ruling there, I believe, right? There's not an official, a final official ruling.
They haven't even issued a press release to acknowledge that any of this is going on. I mean, they have said nothing. The only thing that they've made any comment on was in court over the handling of the split sample. That's it. That's the only acknowledgement that they've made that this is even happening, which is just nuts. And, you know, nobody there – believe it, you could call over there and nobody there is talking. They're not talking. So here we go into the Breeders' Cup, and you have to call Medina Spirit, you know, the current winner of the Kentucky Derby, you know,
right,
or the potentially disqualified winner of the Kentucky Derby. And it's just nuts. It's just nuts. But the problem is that the system is going to be very – I just don't know how – I mean, I've thought about this for 30 years. I went to the University of Arizona, and the racetrack, we had classes like Racing Regulations 101, and it's been screwed up since then. But the problem is that we have, and it's not even that there's like 38 different jurisdictions, it's that you're dealing with state governments, and state governments don't have racing experts, and you know, when you're a government entity, you have to follow all the rules and procedures that you would, you know. And in the end, the lawyers get involved, and it just gets mucked up. I mean, I don't think we're going to get a conclusion on this Baffert thing, on the Baffert thing, like there's 18 of them. But the Derby, I don't think we're going to get a ruling on the Derby until 2023 or 2024. I really don't.
I love this game. All right, Chuck, stick around and handicap a couple races with us.
Yes, I'll give you horses that you can throw out.
I love it. All right, we're going to get a quick shot where the turf meets surf, bring in Bill and Nick, and Chuck's going to stay with us, handicap a few races. You're listening to Off to the Races, and we're going to handicap in a sec.
Where the turf meets the surf, down at old El Mar, take a plane, take a train, take a car. There's a smile on every face, and a winner in each race, where the turf meets the surf, at Del Mar.
Nick Kahn. Is there anything
yes.
better than thinking that you could be sipping a cocktail, smoking a pipe, which is what you need to be doing when you're listening to Bing Crosby.
Third running of the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar, and never been out there, but man, this would be a great weekend to go out there. The weather's going to be absolutely fabulous out there, and yeah, Bing Crosby certainly has me in the mood.
Well, the weather is always fabulous. San Diego, that's what they do. Derby Bill, are you there?
Yeah, Crosby gets me up for Del Mar and Christmas.
Well, this is how you pay for Christmas, isn't it, Breeders' Cup?
Usually, unless I blow it all at Thanksgiving or, you know, hook into some of that Simon talk you had on there. Let's see, he needs to listen to some Simon Garfunkel and Bridge Jumpers Over Troubled Water or something, man. He needs a Pfizer shot, taking me down with his Baffert stuff. Get the binoculars out and enjoy Del Mar.
I read Joe Drape's column 10 minutes ago.
Joe's always, he loves him some racing, doesn't he? So, all right, guys, let's dive in. First of the five races Friday, Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. And Chuck, every horse here was bred in Ireland, and they're all trained by Wesley Ward. Is that more or less the story?
I gotta admit that I struggle really badly with these turf sprints. I really have no idea how they're going to be set up, and it just is. I bet against Golden Pal every race, and you see every race he wins. So at some point, I figure I'll be right. But I mean, it's a difficult race. It really is.
No question about that. The favorite there is Averly Jane for Wesley Ward, who now 4-for-4, and when they finally got her on the turf, she won easy over another horse who's here, Coffee Maker. So, Derby Bill, what about you? We got lots of Irish horses.
No, the turf doesn't scare me. I love 5-furlong turf free-for-alls. We used to have 14 at Colonial Downs just about every race when that place was on top of the turf world. I mean, 14 running five that ran different tracks, never ran at Colonial before. And this is similar to these foreign horses coming over here that haven't run at Del Mar. You know, you got, you know, Averly Jane, obviously the favorite there. He's just can't bet a favorite. I'm going with Run Curtis Run here. It's just a speed horse, and just think I can take the turf. His first try on the turf was at Belmont, and he finished second in a grade 3 race, and he's stepping up here. And Twilight Gleaming is 2-for-2 for Ward. Obviously, Ward is red hot right now. He's even, you know, he's hotter than Baffert. Yeah, didn't mean to bring that word up
there,
too much.
There
today,
you go. But now you've done it.
Yeah, got to get Simonator pumped up over there. And this is Simon. Four
no
career start for Ward, but he hadn't raced in a while. But I like the odds, you know. Ortiz Jr. on him, Twilight Gleaming. I'm gonna use Twilight Gleaming and Run Curtis Run, and beat the hell out of the favorites.
Attaboy. What about you, Nick? What do you think?
Well, considering the condition of Arlington Park, I am absolutely going to stay away from Go Bears Go. I'm thinking Stop Bears Stop, but. you know, this is a little bit of the Wesley Ward Derby here with three entries, and I think what is his highest? He does have one that's 12-1, but I put a check mark by Twilight Gleaming. Just following the hunches here. I like the way that horse worked a little bit at Keeneland in October, and you kind of have to put a little bit more preference on that. I was kind of looking also at this Rosario horse for Clement coming out of Woodbine, Derry Nane, Quality Road. So I think Bill's absolutely right. I mean, this is not a day, and the way the races came out. You want to run from favorites here because you're going to have to hit several of them to get back above par. And I think it's a good opportunity to reach. So, and I actually like time for party a little bit. Time to party, rather. It's almost time to party. What time is it in the West Coast? Maybe 6. It's 5 o'clock. Hey, time to party.
5 o'clock
but,
somewhere.
Yeah.
What
but
about Twilight Jet?
Like,
does anybody like Twilight Jet at all? Michael O'Callaghan.
The Europeans say that he is the fastest of their horses, at least out of the gate. And Mike Iverone of Big Brown fame just bought into him. So if Twilight Jet does win, he's likely to take his shirt off or something in the winner's circle. But
are you threatening us?
he was out there this afternoon. They ran a horse, and he had the vest with no shirt on. The guy's like,
he just gets weirder and weirder. But
Twilight Jet has as much chance as the New York Jets tonight.
I didn't even know the Jets were playing, but you could always bet against the Jets. I like how this horse is coming in here, though. This horse has been really kind of moving forward every race a little better than the one before.
You must have caught the Newmarket Academy Cornwallis Stakes.
It's one of my favorites. It's a Group 3.
No, I know. That's how you saw that horse. I mean, Twilight Jet, you know, raced about, what, 4 in the morning? You know, only when the Insomniacs and Derby Bill are up. Yeah. 15-1 is a good price.
You can say one thing about Twilight Jet. Twilight Jet is not lacking in experience. This is his 7 starts.
No, 10 starts already. It's old school.
That's more than Maxfield has made in 3 years.
That's right. Half our
if horses. If I went best only on the back of a horse, I'd be rubbing aloe on myself for a week.
I just don't know. All right. Anybody have anything? Any last thing to say about the Juvenile Turf Sprint? I'm going to take that as a no. Let's move on to the Juvenile Fillies. Only 6 in the Juvenile Fillies and a 4-5 favorite in the form of Echo Zulu, a daughter of Gunrunner for Steve Asmussen. And what do you think, Nick? You trying to beat Echo Zulu or are you going to just eat the chalk and move on to the next thing?
Well, you know I'm a Colonial Downs homer.
And you got
I'm
two
gonna
of them in here.
Yeah, they're two here with Dallas Stewart, Brett Calhoun, Hidden Connection, and Sequest. Just looking at Hidden Connection here a little bit, this is like almost a classic setup when you start looking. And I know a lot of people don't put a lot of stock in the works because there's so much direction that you get in the morning, but it, real sharp work, and then all of a sudden you just get that little tune-up work on October 28th before shipping out. It's just it makes me think that Calhoun thinks this horse, he's got him where he is, you know, where he wants him. He's fresh on the racetrack. He hadn't raced since September, and I think if you're going to beat Echo Zulu, I think this might be the opportunity to do so.
You agree with that, Chuck?
Just let me say one thing. Two of the trainers in this race started their training careers with me, Phil D'Amato and Cherie DeVoe. And I'm rooting for both of them, and I think that both of them are probably up against it. I think Echo Z is going to win this race, and I think the main reason is that she's going to get to the lead. And I don't believe that Hidden Connection's fast enough to stay with her. And I don't believe Two Jews Matter is going to say, hey, I want to go head-and-head with Echo Zulu and maybe set it up for someone else. So I think that Rosario from post 6 is going to gun right to the lead, and I think she's going to get about a 2-length lead on these horses. And I think the Hidden Connection with Ray Lou Gutierrez, who's a good rider, he's a good up-and-coming rider, this is his first Breeders' Cup mount. And he's going to be tight going into there. And I know that the last thing he wants to do is go head-and-head with a 3-5 shot. Florent Giroux is riding TV's map. And, you know, he's a good rider, but the one kind of knock against him is sometimes he's not aggressive. So I just think that Echo Zulu is going to get an easy lead. And, I mean, her pedigree suggests that the mile and a 16th should be within her scope. And I hate, like, I don't bet 3 to 5 shots. So, I mean, this is probably a race I'll pass. But I just couldn't really, you know, if Hidden Connection was 7 to 1, it's fine. But she's going to be 2 to 1.
Right.
So, to me, I just couldn't see any scenarios that didn't involve, like, you know, jockeys going nuts and having speed duels. But they just don't do that anymore.
What about you, Bill? What do you think?
Well, you don't have to pass on the race. They put a daily double in there where you can bet it with the turf on Saturday. So you can do a juvenile turf and a turf on Saturday with Petruska or Dunbar Road if you're a wild long shot player. So there is an avenue to play on one of these two horses. But Echo Zulu and Hidden Connection, let's see, they run like, what, 5 races and they've won by like 16 lengths each. I mean, they're just two dominant horses here. You know, Hidden Connection was a story because, you know, 7 win length here at Colonial, and then he ran up at Churchill and just smoked him into Pocahontas like, you know, he's just having a powwow with Pocahontas there. Just absolutely destroyed the field and paid nothing as a favorite. But, you know, $20 is not nothing to me if you put 10 on him. So, yeah, it's a little something. It's a upgrade on the value menu at Wendy's. But Echo Zulu is the daughter of Gunrunner, and Gunrunner won the Pegasus Pick 4 for me and $4,000, so I'm not going to go against anything connected with Gunrunner. So Echo Zulu and Hidden Connection, I'm using both of them in other bets, like Pick 4s, Pick 3s, and the 2-day daily double. But Hidden Connection was an interesting story because the owner, Black Type Thoroughbred, jumped on board when he was here at Colonial Downs. He come to watch Oatsonside run in a race, and he saw Hidden Connection, and he bought him on the spot after that win. And then Black Type Thoroughbreds bought 40% of this horse out of that race, and he goes into Pocahontas and gets all his money back. So the Hidden Brook Farm connection there. I like Nick, and I like Mr. Simons, hoping he goes 3 to 1, and everybody goes on Echo Zulu, you know, heavily, but I don't think it's going to happen. Like you guys said, the two favorites are here chalk. You got to play them with something else.
All right, that's going to be the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. That's race 7 tomorrow. Race 8 is the Juvenile Fillies Turf, and this one's got 1 million horses, and they all look more or less the same. Favorite here is Pizza Bianca for Bobby Flay and Christophe Clement. Also of note, Consumer Spending, the 7 horse for Chad Brown, 8 to 1 morning line, did win the Salima Stakes at Laurel Park in our catchment area. So, Nick, let's start with you here, Juvenile Fillies Turf.
I had a hard time separating this bunch. I drew the arrow next to Koala Princess. Rosario, returns to this mount, and it's kind of interesting just going back to the Juvenile Fillies here briefly. The only jockey with a new mount in the race is Echo Zulu with Rosario. But I think this is a race certainly to spread out in, and plenty of options. But I ended up with Koala Princess as my top horse here. But after that, I'm just going to try and fan out as on the exotics. It's kind of funny. One horse I also looked at was Cairo Memories, and for whatever reason, I've fallen in love with betting the Cairo Prince horses, and I think it goes back to the pandemic when those horses just seemed to win a lot when you were betting races every day, 2 tracks a day, when there was nothing else to do. It just kind of stuck with me. So I'm kind of locked in on that horse. But, I mean, in your exotics and your multis, I'd go 5, 6, maybe even deeper in this group.
What do you think, Bill? Is that the case?
Certainly not using Bobby Flay. I'm going to try to slay Flay. Any chef that's 160 pounds, I can't really support. You know. Obviously,
spoken like
you know,
Derby Bill.
He has a problem with eating his own food, but he is good for the sport. And his horse is solid here, owned. Should be a storyline for the NBC broadcast. But I'm going with Bubble Rock here. More Than Ready's two-year-old filly here. Won a matron at Belmont, won Saratoga. You can do both of them. You're a solid two-year-old. Ortiz will be up here. 8-1 morning line is a little bit that should drop a little. I don't think you'll get 8-1 on this horse, but if I get 8-1, I'll be very happy with that one. Kulu Princess here, another interesting horse. As you guys have said, this one's wide, spanking open. A lot of two-year-olds that have won races. Rosario rode this horse last time at, Kentucky Downs, Fort Knox of the horse racing industry. And if you can win there, you can win anywhere. Coming up that hill and on the grass, he went from like eighth and just came up that final leap there in a short race. Stretching out here a little bit, but More Than Ready bloodline, so he can run it forever. So, and like you guys, I'm going to have to use some more horses in this one. Cachet, nice long shot here. Hasn't won since a maiden, but Mr. Vespi might like him. He ran at Newmarket at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, well, that's my main focus is horses that run inaccessible places at times I can't stay up till. Chuck, what do you got here for me?
Same as everybody else has said, I think there's like 8 horses you could make a case for. I think I'm going to definitely use Consumer Spending. I was really impressed with her last race. And with this big 14-horse field, she's shown the ability to deal with traffic and make a quicken, and that's important. I'm also going to use Koala Prince, certainly Rosario getting off Clement's horse, who he's like, the main rider for to ride her. Is a really good show. The Kentucky Downs horses that ran well have been doing great all fall. They went to Keeneland, won a bunch of races, and I mean it's a lot of key races came out of Kentucky Downs. There's another horse that I'm going to use a little bit, and that's Turner Loose. Turner Loose is going to be on the lead here, and the one thing in California sometimes horse gets an easy lead, and they're blown speed is dangerous anywhere, but especially out there. So I'm going to probably use her. She's probably the forgotten horse. And, I mean, the horse is going off favorite every time. But, I mean, you can't bet everybody, right? But she should be on the lead, turning for home. And at the very least, I'll have that. And I'm thinking she's going to be 12, 13, 14 to 1.
Yeah, you get a little cutback there, too. She coughed up the lead last time going a mile on 16th. Loses that 16, so a little shorter might work to her advantage in this one. All right, anybody last thoughts on the Juvenile Fillies turf? All right, then we are off to the $2 million Juvenile mile and a 16th on the main track, another big field here. Jack Christopher is the morning line favorite at 9-5 for surprising twist, Chad Brown. Corniche, we were just talking about, Chuck and I, for Bob Baffert, 5-2. Also in here is a Virginia bred Oviatt Class for Keith DeSormo, going to have Kent DeSormo up. This is, of course, bred by Morgan's Ford Farm and Godolphin. So our friends at Morgan's Ford have a little rooting interest here on this one. Chuck, let's start with you. Make some sense of this race, would you?
I think this is a really weak race outside of the top 3 or 4 horses. I think a lot of these horses are just kind of also-rans. Jack Christopher obviously has been really good. I don't like Post 1 for two-year-olds in races like this because he's running short fields. He's been in the middle of the pack. He's broke fine. He's had a clear path. He's never had anything in his way. If he were to break a step slow and he were to get 3 or 4 horses to come over on him, it puts him in a tough position, especially at 6-5. I don't know. I'm guessing Mike Smith is going to gun from post 12 with Corniche. I mean, what other choices do you really have, right? So I'm guessing he's going to try to loop Jack Christopher. Baffert has 2 other horses inside, but neither of them look as fast as him. The horse I'm really probably going to key on here is Command Performance. And I watched this replay in the Champagne a bunch of times. And I don't think the chart's right. I think this horse was further than 6 lengths behind. I just think he was. I mean, I watched it, and I'm, you know, stopping and counting. And to me, he looked like he was 8 or 9 lengths behind. And he made a nice move. He was wide the whole way, and he was finishing. And it wasn't like, you know, Jose Ortiz was wrapping up on Jack Christopher. He was closing the gap. And I know he's still a maiden, but I was there at Saratoga's first start, and this horse got absolutely wiped out at the start. And I remember going on Twitter and saying, if the stewards aren't going to disqualify the horse for taking out 4 horses at the start in this race, they should never, ever, ever disqualify anybody coming out of the gate. But he's going to be a decent price, probably less than what he should be. But that's where I'm going to go. I just wanted to say that I saw some people a little griping about the Japanese horses being over here, but I'm happy that they came. And the horse, Jasper Great, who has that one race, that he won on the lead in that race. It doesn't say, but he was on the lead in the Japanese race. We don't get fractions, but he's out of an American family. I mean, Shopagain is actually most of the dams of Shopagain were Mrs. DuPont's horses, and that wound up. I think Shopagain wound up being a hobo horse, but Alan Jerkins trained that, you know, most of that family. So I mean, the horses by Arrowgate. No, Arrowgate didn't like Del Mar. I said to somebody, has anyone done any studies to see if a sire liked this particular track or didn't like a track, if it's ever passed on? And people all look at me like I'm crazy. But
it sounds like it's Ed DeRosa's alley, though.
Yeah, I'm afraid to ask Ed because you never know what you're going to get with him. But everybody's mad at him for his Latrusha comment yesterday. But command performance is where I'm going to go, and I really don't have much of a strong opinion outside of that. I mean, Jack Christopher's a good horse. Corniche is a good horse. What if they get in a speed duel?
Yeah, and then, of course, you just mentioned Jasper Great waiting on the front end. You know, is he going to be involved in that as well? Is another question. Nick, what do you got for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile?
Oh boy! Is this the Baffert Derby with 3 Baffert horses and the longest odds being 10-1? You know, this will be an interesting race just to watch how people bet on it and you know see if they line up behind Baffert or not, whether how much they want to win and maybe, you know, where their ethics lie or whatever. But we've had talks about Baffert, you know, several times. It's real interesting race for me. I agree. Jack Christopher 9-5 in a field like this. You know, I'm gonna shop around. Command Performance, who lost to Jack Christopher, is all the way up to 5-1. You know, so you go from in the Champagne the first place finisher to the second place finisher, and you get that much of a morning line odds jump is a little intriguing. But then you look at Command Performance, a maiden, you know, in this group, the only one, you know, I remember having discussions about 2-year-old stakes races where, you know, one of the eligibility requirements was to not be a maiden, you know, that it really shouldn't be a stakes race unless you have a win, you know, a couple of years ago. That certainly has gone by the wayside. But I agree with Chuck on a lot of the horses that he talked about. I looked at that Japanese horse as well and found that intriguing, you know, with Airgate. I'd throw one other horse in here, and I think this is just a horse that, you know, might be hitting his stride, and that's Giant Game, coming off a big win at Keeneland, and Giant's Causeway horse, you know, didn't work all that well right before in his first workout at Del Mar after coming from Churchill. But this horse kind of intrigues me a little bit at 30-1. I think he just might be worth throwing in the exotics just to get that Breeders' Cup value that always seems to show up on this day.
I like it. I like a 30-1. What about you, Derby Bill? You got a 30-1 Giant Game in here?
Not quite, but Simon and Watson, the Sounds of Silence version 2, Simon and Watson catching, grabbing Command Performance here. I'm thinking with Mr. Simon there. This one ran at Belmont. I saw the race. He looked like he went over to the New York Islanders' new stadium. He ran so wide around the track, just had no chance against Jack Christopher after going that wide at a mile. And the slop at Saratoga, he was obviously looking at the 40,000 ladies there. You know, the two-year-old colt's always looking at the ladies. So, you know, two distracted races. He comes in focused here, gets 5-1 over your and rebuttal against Jack Christopher. Nothing wrong with Jack Christopher. Chad Brown has that horse in top form. So, you know, the only other horse I liked in here was, you won't believe it, but it's and Nick put his hands over his ears right now. Is a Virginia bred Oviatt class. This horse is a monster closer. If anything happens and they're two-year-olds, I mean, it's like me in line for a Pfizer shot with five-year-olds today. I mean, anything can happen with two-year-olds. I mean, anything can happen, and the Oviatt class will be coming late with a guy named Kent DeZorma and Keith DeZorma. I mean, have they won a few races in California? I mean, these guys know what they're doing out there. He's got Tisnell blood. And, you know, if anything happens with the speed horses, it's going to be coming late to get a piece of the pie. So don't toss them out there. But I agree with Mr. Simon here. It's I'm going with the command performance, Simon and Watson.
I don't know what to do with this new Simon and Watson team here. I feel like there might be like a sitcom coming out of this or something.
It sounds like the law firm that represents Baffert. Watson. Esquire.
Well, they wrote a song about us a long time ago, Sounds of Silence. You know, Mr. Paul Simon wrote.
All right, that's the juvenile. Juvenile Turf, a mile, a billion horses, 14-2 on the AE, one of the AEs ready to perform, who won the Laurel Futurity. He's also cross-entered in a regular stake on the earlier on the card, so he needs a scratch to draw in. But there's a million horses, a lot of ways to go, and let's have Derby Bill take us into this one.
We talking Juvenile Turf?
We are.
Juvenile Turf. Yeah. This one's baffling. This is the one that I haven't figured out yet. So
okay.
I'll need another Pfizer booster, you know, to get through this one.
Nick,
I like
what
Albar.
About you?
The Godolphin horse. I like Albar a lot here, and you know, other than that, it's like an all button behind Albar. So I'll let the other guys devour this one, and I'll watch the Colts Jets.
I think the favorite here is Dubawi Legend, who's 4-1, but breaking from the 14 seems like a good reason to bet against. Nick, what you got?
I went just kind of a thought here. I'm almost sure we saw a lot of different horses on the backstretch of Colonial Downs this summer. Just a lot of dirt horses, a lot of stables with the Churchill situation coming out. And I'm almost sure I saw Tis the Bomb on the backstretch. Right before the show, I went to try and find the workout tabs, and I didn't see any works at Colonial. But I'm almost sure I saw that horse on the backstretch with McPeak there. This is very similar. It's a similar race as the. I mean, just a wide open field here. I kind of like Portfolio Company here. This Kitten's Joy. I always liked them on the turf. It's a very similar. I mean, all these horses, they're never behind. I mean, go find like where a horse was fifth, you know, worse than fifth in any of their races anywhere in this field. It's a hard number to find. So I'm kind of looking at Tis the Bomb a little bit, but I really like Portfolio Company here for Chad Brown.
Chuck?
Number one, I think the morning line here is horrific. I think this is the worst morning line I've ever seen on a big race. How Albar is not the favorite is beyond me. The horse was 3-5 in the summer at Woodbine, and he galloped for a trainer that is dominated in the U.S. You know, Appleby is 43% this year, but remember, out of those 14 races, he ran 1-2 like five times. So he's like 80% first or second. His other horse, the one Modern Games, has done nothing but run well. And that horse is not as well thought of as Albar is. Yet he's 5-1. But to me, it's the two Appleby horses. And, you know, you guys can have everybody else. I'm keeping my man Chuck Appleby. And I think Dubai Legend is going to be 8-9-1. I can't imagine that he will be anything lower than that. How he's the favorite over the two Appleby horses is just like – and the Chad Brown horse as well. I mean, it just – it makes no sense to me at all. I don't understand why that horse is the favorite. But the Appleby, the one and the two are – that's – If one of those two doesn't win, then I'm not going to win.
I like it. So you're just so we're clear here, you're kind of staking your day on those horses.
Chuck Appleby, man, that's my guy.
I like it.
He's a good.
Is it a Chuck thing or is it?
I think it's Godolphin.
No, it's the guy that's 43% thing. His name could be Abdullah, and I'd be fine with him. He could be Henry. He could be Frank.
Nah,
no,
not Frank.
Run as good as his horses have run in this country. Believe me, Frank, you could have ridden some of these.
Now, that's a sight we do not wish to see.
Just a few pounds over.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, wow, that horse is plus 60 today. How about that? all right, so we got a lot of love for the two Appleby horses, the 1-2 Modern Games, Albar. Nick, you're locating yourself a little bit on Portfolio Company, is that right?
Yes. Sorry, I already flipped the page. But, yes, I'm going to go there. I'm going to probably throw in Tiz the Bomb because I think he's a ghost or something. And and then, from there, and then all.
And then all. All right, fair enough. Did any of this get you any further insights, Derby Bill?
Yeah, Tiz the Bomb never worked at Colonial Downs. It was a drink in the third floor turf club bar, I believe, for Nick Hahn. Tiz the Bomb is a Kentucky horse, and he's never come across this Commonwealth so far.
Mr. McPeak
bought Nick drinks one night, and they saw this horse, and he showed him on his phone this horse from Kentucky. Mr. McPeak's been here several times, but I agree with Mr. Simon here. It's a Godolphin thing here. I want money back. William Buick, I put $45 in a Buick today, and I want my money back. William Buick's Modern Games.
Where's the caddy?
Albar. Oh, the caddy has been retired.
The caddy was retired?
Retired in 1985 with 150,000 horse racing, OTB driving miles.
Well, dang.
Been to Tampa, Gulfstream, New York. Let's see what that thing. Up in the mountains, up in the stills of the mountains in the moonshine country. Some things that come to an end. 1985.
This really takes a wind out of my sails to learn that the caddy is no more. That was like a land shark. That was like out of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas or something. That was a serious movie.
It was a mainstay in the handicap parking space at Colonial Downs. They called me a handicapper, so I used the handicap parking place with my white Eldorado. But I know you had $20 on the Eldorado Outlast and Derby Bill, so you're really upset.
You got me.
Hey, Frank?
Yeah?
I just wanted to let you know Tiz the Bomb was Derby Bill's pick in the Kitten's Joy Stakes on Virginia Derby Day. That's all I got to say. I knew I saw that horse.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm going Godolphin. Godolphin Exactabox there, 1-2, and using them in the, what is that? That's a daily double race with tied into Sunday, too, that I'm working on. Yeah, special race, daily double.
This race and the Saturday race, 11. So you're going 1-2. So you got the Lawrence Welk thing going on. That's just a one and a two.
Oh, God, I'm
all right. All right, that's going to do it for Friday, and it's going to do it for us here on Off to the Races. Final thoughts, Chuck Simon, anything particularly that you want to leave us with? Any bets you're excited about, storylines to watch, anything? Drink you're going to drink?
I'm betting Bella Sophia in the Philly Mare Sprint on Saturday.
You're trying to beat Gammy.
I'm not going to try, Frank. We're going to beat Gammon.
I like it. Approaching
and,
the
and
races.
I like the German horse. I will not try to pronounce the name, but I like the German horse in the Breeders' Cup Turf, the 9. I can't pronounce the name, the trainer, the sire, none of it, but I like that horse. And I think you're going to get a solid price on that horse.
I bet Nick Hahn knows how to pronounce it. I'm not going to put him on the spot, but I bet he does, being of German descent.
A lot of yeah, I'm not even sure it's a German word, but it starts with an S. The 9 horse. Those are my two keys for Saturday.
Okay, all right.
Put it this way: if they win, you might not find me for 3 or 4 months. I might be on some Caribbean island. With the drinks with little umbrellas on them.
Little umbrellas? All right. Well,
yeah,
this is for the little umbrella fund for Chuck Simon. I like it.
Yep.
I like it. Nick, what about you? Final thoughts?
Opening night, Hampton Sydney Tigers go up against Greensboro tomorrow night. I'll try and watch some of these juvenile races, but I'm going to be doing that in between buckets and in between races. But good luck to the Tigers. Tip off 6 o'clock tomorrow.
That's the one, Jay Kahn, one of the stars of the Hampton Sydney Tigers. Well, good luck for them. Bill, you want to take us home?
Well, the mean beating thing turned a couple people's hair white or whiter. If Mr. Simon comes up with an upset there, that intrigues me. I'm going to have to look at Saturday's card a little more. I think we're coming back for Saturday, aren't we? Going to attack some of them races Saturday?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it Saturday. Nick, can you join us?
Yes.
Chuck, you want to come back for more, or has this probably exhausted you?
Just give me a call, Frank. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. Just send up the Simon and Watson signal, and I'm cool.
Hey. We need a bad signal for you guys.
We got to make t-shirts.
Hey, we're on the Western Standard Time. Western Standard Time. You don't have to do the show so early, and, you know, it's plenty of time to – we don't have no 10 o'clock in the morning races.
It's funny. They turned the Breeders' Cup into a nighttime event and, like, didn't tell anybody. I didn't even realize it until someone pointed it out the other day. You know, post time for the last race in both these days is like 8:30 or 8:45 at night. I was like, oh.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, well.
The classic goes at 5:40 Pacific. That's 8:40 here on the East Coast.
Now all they have to do is turn it into a weekend event.
Yeah, really.
Don't give them any ideas.
Who knows? We could be sure they're not saying, I wonder what the betting public thinks about this idea. All right. Gentlemen.
The Breeders' Cup race.
Thanks, guys.
The Breeders' Cup race. The Breeders' Cup, you know, Friday Festival doesn't kick off till 5:30, the actual Breeders' Cup races. So most people are, you know, off duty, so to speak, and, you know, sort of happy hour on the East Coast. So I expect a record handle from the East Coast watching these races on the West Coast.
Well, let's see what happens. We're going to have the answer to that and many other questions 24-ish hours from now. All right, guys, that's going to do it. Chuck Simon, thank you. Derby Bill Watson, thank you. Nick Hahn, thank you. We appreciate all you guys, and we'll come back and tackle them again in a couple of days. Good luck good luck tomorrow. As I say, that's going to do it. So thanks to Chuck, Bill, and Nick. Thanks, of course, to our listeners for listening to us babble here, whatever it is that we have been saying for the last hour and a half. We appreciate you guys being with us. Tune in next week for another – actually, tune in a couple of days, and we'll do it all again. And hopefully we will have given you some winners on Friday's races. My name's Frank Vespi. This is Off to the Races. Keep up with racing all the time on theracesfest.com. We'll catch you in a couple of days. Good luck tomorrow, everybody.